Very welcome to the first podcast of They Mess You Up. Yes, Kira, that's right. We're back. I'm Dr. Richard Hogan.
And I'm Dr. Kira Kelly. And every week we're going to be talking about something to do with, I suppose, our origins and what feed into the shape of us mentally and psychologically.
We want to get into the corners of life that people don't often talk about in these podcasts.
Completely.
We want to get into the kind of stuff that we all live with, but sometimes there might be a bit of a taboo around it.
Yeah.
So that's the discussions I'm interested in having. I know.
Yeah, I know the exact same. But also, sometimes people have these issues in their heads and they don't know how to name them even, or they don't even know why they bother them. And we're here to sort of shine a light on all of
that. Exactly. And they often feel that they're the only one living with it because nobody else speaks about it.
I think that is the universal human condition, that you think you are the only person experiencing some kind of psychic pain when all of us are experiencing it.
And today we're going to be talking about those relationships that might be somewhat sexless.
Yeah, no sex at all. Why is that?
Let me give you this little bit of information. Google says that the amount of people who check up sexless marriages is 3 times more than unhappy marriages and 8 times more than loveless marriages. So what that kind of suggests is that sexless marriages are very, very common.
And I think that would be borne out both in my clinical practice over the years. A lot of people, and that's, you and I are very lucky people in a way. We're in a very privileged position. I don't mean that we make nice money or that we live in a leafy suburb, but we're in a very privileged position because people will tell us about their inner lives.
Absolutely.
And that is a privileged position to be, that trust that they'll put in you, but also that insight that you get into the human condition. It's a very privileged position. But I can't tell you the amount of people who told me when sex would be brought up and I would, you know, ask. I wouldn't just ask randomly about their sex lives, but when it did come up, maybe once or twice a year, or maybe not for the past few years. And people were talking in years, not in months and not in weeks and not in days. And it was very, very common. And I know even from talking in my extended social life, because as you get older, people are more open about this, I think, than they were when they were younger and everyone was pretending they were all like rabbits all the time. Lots of people would have said to me, I haven't had sex in years, or that it is an annual event as opposed to a weekly event.
A holiday.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I suppose we need to kind of get in and think, well, what does sexless mean? Kind of like a sexless marriage? What's the definition of that? And I suppose it's probably, you know, sex maybe less than 10 times a year. It would kind of be the kind of like way people would define a sexless marriage.
That's very little. But I also think, and this is important, the amount of sex you have in your marriage or in your relationship, because not everyone is married, but in your relationship, only matters if there is a mismatch between what the two people are having. So if I want to have loads of sex and I'm not getting any sex, that's an issue.
Exactly.
But if neither of us are particularly interested in sex, that's fine. Or if both of us want to have loads of sex, that's fine too. It's the mismatch.
And not having sex in your marriage or having little sex in your marriage doesn't mean there's a crisis in your marriage, because I like what you're saying, because it's important to define that for people, because, you know, comparison is not your friend here. And so you watch, you watch Dynasty or what, Dallas or whatever, and they're all having sex, and they're having raging.
You showed your age wildly there with Dynasty and Dallas, but okay.
I think if anything moderate, the last thing I ever watched, I don't know what it was. But anyway, so they're all having sex on the desk and they can't wait to ravage each other. They're making the soup there and all of a sudden they're on top of the fucking hob. That's dangerous. You could burn yourself there, third degree burns, Kira.
Top safety tips on this podcast. No sex on the hob unless off.
Unless it's off. And it's been off for a while.
Yeah,
because you can get residual heat there. So anyway, you know what I mean? So the comparison piece can make us feel like, oh my God, we're living, I'm living this really awful life of like no sex. It's really important to understand that part first of all.
Yeah, so if you're both happy with the amount of sex, grand, irrespective of how much it is. But one thing I would be wary of when we have this conversation is, even if both of you are saying you're happy with no sex, and even if both of you, for a period of time, are happy with no sex, sex does have a value in a relationship.
Massive value in a relationship.
And we shouldn't discount it, because the intimacy it creates and the release that it gives and the connection that it fosters and the way that it can move on a relationship. So maybe you're a bit stagnant, or maybe you've had a row, or maybe something else is going on. That physical connection with somebody actually can be therapeutic in its own right.
Absolutely. It's evolutionary. I mean, we're designed for that. I mean, and oxytocin, all these lovely hormones and dopamine,
happy hormones,
serotonin, all these things flow when we were physically connected. And I know when you are physically connected to the person that you're married with, or you're in a relationship with, you love, you've got kids with, I always think you feel actually closer to the universe in some way. Now, that might sound like grand or whatever, but you feel closer and connected to things.
I actually completely agree with you, because I think that sex at its core, and obviously there's lots of different ways people have sex, and I'm not even discounting or getting into kinks and fetish, all of that sort of stuff. But at its core, that physical communing between two people is the essence, or it can be. I know sex can mean everything and sex can mean nothing, but it can be the essence of love, that it is the most physically close you can get to a person, and it can say something and it can mean something. And when it doesn't exist for a long period of time, so that element of your marriage or your relationship is gone and it just feels barren, that element, that is a distance.
It is. And it is restorative and it is healing. I actually, I really think it's such an important thing. So it's like about trying to think about that. So let's have a look at why people
end up in that position.
Yeah, might. And a lot of us end up in that position. And what happens, and I would say, you know, men lose testosterone by 1-2% from their 40s onwards. Testosterone is that supercharged sexual driver there.
For both men and women.
For both men and women. But men have higher levels of testosterone than women. And that's why men might be more sexually. I'm not saying that women haven't got sexual proclivity and desire. Of course they do. Shocking news, of course they do, right? But for men, it drops down, and sometimes I think looking at that and working clinically, it might often not be about rejection, because we can feel terrible rejection there.
This, I think you can break it down, is the reasons people are not having sex. First of all, miscommunication, and that can be both emotional and verbal as well as sexual. So if you're not able to talk to somebody or tell them what you want or express yourself because of inhibition or because of the relationship dynamic, miscommunication sometimes means the person doesn't know what you want, they're not giving you what you want, or they don't know what to do, you know. So there's all of that. So that's really
important.
There's a communications bit, there's a lifestyle bit. You're exhausted. Yeah. You're working long hours. You're getting up with kids in the night. You've just had a baby.
Your ship's passing in the night.
You're all of that
stuff. You're giving chores.
You're drinking.
Dinner. Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to bed with a few pints.
Pornography can be in there.
There's loads of lifestyle stuff that gets in the way.
Yeah.
And then I would say, so I've got that, this is how I view it, the communication-y piece. Then I think there's the lifestyle-y piece. But then, as you say, there's all the hormonal and physical changes. So for men, 50% of men in their 50s have erectile problems. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they can't have sex.
I turned 50 last month, Kira.
Well, we had the whole podcast dedicated to you, Richard. But so, you know, there's all those issues, which happens to coincide, if you're partner is of a similar age to you, with the menopause for women and all this.
Absolutely.
But it can happen much younger, because bear in mind there are younger men with erectile problems too.
And
people, and
pornography is at the core of that too.
Huge amounts of issues with pornography.
Can I add in just one bit?
Go.
There, because you made some really interesting points. Another thing that I think is a barrier to intimacy is what we say to each other in arguments.
You know, wounding.
How we conduct ourselves in an argument. And I don't think you can call...
You always do this. You never do that.
And, you know, you say terrible things to wound the person because you know their buttons. You've lived with them for how many years, so you know what they're, you know, things that they really hate. And you say the worst things to them in those arguments. You launch the most hurtful barbs. They're simmering away there.
In the back of their
minds. It's very hard to get intimate with somebody when you're... Because men are probably a little bit better at compartmentalizing those things. And, like, you know... And so it's very hard when you've said some... fundamentally awful things to somebody to think, no, let's be intimate. And I think that's another thing for us to think about. How do we conduct our arguments? What we say to each other really matters.
I think that is fully part of that communications piece.
Absolutely.
And I think we should drill into those three areas, the communications piece, the lifestyle bit, but also we've touched on the physical thing. People also, I would often look back at pictures of myself when I was young and I would have looked a lot better, but I would have been much more insecure at the time about my body and my appearance than I was as I got older, and didn't look as well, but didn't care as much. So people bring their own body insecurities, their own
baggage from childhood,
awkwardness, or huge amounts. How sex was viewed in your parents?
Absolutely. What happened to you in your childhood?
If you have trauma, sexual trauma, that's a whole other layer.
But you might have drank your way through your 20s, and had loads of sex there, and kind of blotted that out with alcohol.
Then
you get married, you have a relationship, whatever, you have a kid, and all of a sudden you're not drinking as much, and all of those early childhood stuff is rummaging around there and coming up.
And then there is the problem with the physical end of things. Let's stick with the physical end of things, where it's not going well in the bedroom, because either you are a man and you have erectile dysfunction, mm-hmm. or you have problems, maybe you can get an erection but you can't maintain it, or you're finding it harder to orgasm or whatever, mm-hmm. it is. So you have all that stuff going on. Or you're a woman and you have issues where you've started to dislike your body and be uncomfortable about it, sort of sharing it or exposing it, or you have menopausal symptoms, you've got vaginal dryness, and now sex is sometimes not as pleasant, it's hurting maybe, or it's a bit tricky, or it's not reaching an outcome where people climax.
It's the same. It's the same.
Boring.
Boring.
It's those things.
It's perfunctory. You know what I mean?
So there's the boring thing, but I think that comes back to the communication issue. But the physical things, when it starts to go wrong, a lot of people don't do what they should do if they want to keep it going, which is talk about it, work on it. Instead, they avoid it. And then that creates its own problem, because if you are a woman and you start to avoid sex, your husband feels rejected and he's unhappy. Mm-hmm. But he's heard that this happens and he's maybe. But if you are a man and you're like, I don't think I can orgasm at the moment, or whatever, or
I'm not interested in it.
Or I've lost my sex drive. Yeah. And the woman, and we are being very heteronormative here, but let's just stick with this for a while. And the woman starts to feel rejected. Women have been told that men want sex all the time, all day, every day. And so they think, if the man doesn't want to have sex with them,
something wrong with me.
He doesn't find me attractive. Mm. He doesn't like me. And what's wrong with me? And then the self-loathing about, it's because I have a big tummy, or it's because all that. So people are getting into bed and their heads are ruminated. Loaded with
all of this stuff.
Insecurities, fear, self-loathing, worries about their body, and then it's easier to not have it than to have it.
Exactly.
Because having it is a bit of a ordeal, a wound, or a challenge,
like it's a chore,
and it mightn't go well.
No.
And that is, it becomes a self-fulfilling.
Yeah. Just before sleep, you're stressed out, and then you're lying in bed ruminating about what's happened there.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
You feel so disconnected from someone just before. I mean, that's not going to make you go to sleep.
No.
That realization that you're disconnected from the person that you're closest to, and that there's a little bit of a chasm
and
there between you.
All of these things, all of these thoughts, they're just in us, and we're not necessarily saying to the person that's lying next to us, "I feel unattractive, I feel rejected, I feel insecure, I think I'm not doing it right because you did an orgasm the last time I did that, and I thought
you find me attractive anymore?
I thought you liked that, but now I don't, and now I've lost confidence in what I was doing, but also I don't think you fancy me." And we're the baggage that weighs down our sex lives, I think, is what sinks our sex lives. It's like throwing a heavy stone and it just becomes, it's easier just to roll over and go, Nice,
exactly.
You know,
then delving into the bag, opening it up, and seeing what's in there.
Yeah, and throwing away the stuff that's holding you back.
So communication, what we're saying there, is the really key.
I think that is the key. I think communication, but add into this mix now the difficulty that lots of people have talking about sex because of, particularly if you're of a certain age. Like the older you are, the harder it is to talk about it because you weren't supposed to talk about it. It was rude, dirty.
We weren't having it.
We weren't having it.
I don't know how Irish people
perpetuated
it, but we weren't having it according to what was happening in society. We weren't supposed to do it for fun and for pleasure and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And we find it hard to talk to our kids about it. You know, we don't want to talk to children about it.
I'm hugely open, and I really am, and I talk to my kids about lots of things. But frank conversations about sex are still, I'm still existing in that space of hoping for the best with them, that they are stumbling along, hopefully without too many hang-ups or inhibitions or whatever, but stumbling along and finding their feet in the same way we all kind of did, without much guidance from me. Because I also do think that there is a truism that says no one wants to know about sex of another generation. No one wants to know about their parents having sex, and no one wants to know about their children having sex. That is deeply uncomfortable for all of us. So I think, and that's probably true,
that's
is it?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think kids should know about their parents' like emotional world there or their sex life like that, you know what I mean? And that kind of stuff. I think that's themes of adults for adults.
La, la, la,
yeah,
la,
exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us want to think about our parents. I don't think any of us want to think that we are the product of our parents enjoying themselves there. It's a hard image for us all to think about.
I think we have to end the podcast right now because you've just put something in my head that I didn't
we
actually want to
We are all an orgasm.
That's Richard a terrible Hogan. Thing. Dr. Richard Hogan. Let's break it down. Imagine there was two people in the room with us who are like, we're not having sex and it's ruining our relationship. Mm. We're not happy about it. Maybe neither of us are happy about it, but we don't know how to fix it. How do we rebuild, in essence, I think, rebuild intimacy is what you're looking for.
Yeah,
and the sex will follow when the intimacy is rebuilt.
For sure. And I find tabling or timetabling intimacy is not a great way to go. I don't think anyone wants to kind of go, it's 9:30 now, we should sleep together. I don't think that's good for any of us. And it gets a bit more of that in your 40s because, like, you know, you do only have a window of 9:30. The kids have gone to bed and, you know, in the morning it's chaotic. Lunch is out the door and you're working, coming home. So there might be a little bit more of that in your 40s. And I think that's probably a thing that disrupts it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I would always be trying to find little ways of us connecting emotionally first, you know, before actually thinking about your sexual life. How are you with each other? Intimacy is a massive thing. I don't mean just sex, or, you know, how are you connected
if
to
you
each other?
Can't talk to the person,
yeah.
If you
very
can't,
hard to get naked and have sex,
yeah,
with someone
if you can't express inner feelings, quite hard to sexually connect, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, I think it is. And that's why it's the first thing I'd always do when I'm working with someone about their intimacy and
talk.
It's time away from the gift. They have kids now, because that's a big disruptor to your intimacy, obviously. So, you know,
they've ruined all our sex lives, haven't they? They genuinely have. They're
barriers for sure. But when you go out, are you talking about the kids all the time? Is your identity just mom, Kira Kelly? I don't think it is.
No,
mine
not
isn't
for
just
me,
dad.
It's not.
You know what I mean? It's important that you.
But I do suspect if you're going out and talking about just being mom all the time with your partner,
it's hard.
Is that not a bit of a deflection from something else?
It's can
like
be.
It's almost like this is a safe thing to talk about because there's other things we don't want.
But even
to talk
I
about.
Even think this. It's funny because, you know, I even think calling my partner mom, you know, or she calls me dad, you know, and all that. I think that's a kind of a killer to your sex life. You know,
yeah, mommy says.
Yeah, mom. What, daddy? Yeah. Have you got the toothpaste? You know, I'm like, what the hell are you doing there?
Yeah.
You know,
he's not your daddy, unless he's your daddy. But that's a different.
That's a whole other thing. There's no need for this conversation if he's your daddy.
Who's your daddy?
But you know what I'm saying? I think that stuff kind of gets into the psyche of someone. You
I
know?
Remember talking to a psychosexual counselor once about this kind of thing and about rekindling things, and one of the things she said, and I'm going to tell you straight up, I didn't agree. She said, "Well." Journaling is really good, and I did agree with that. Writing your thoughts, writing your feelings, and she said, and if you just come to the person and read it to them, and I said, nothing would put me off more having sex with somebody if somebody came and read me. I just went, oh.
See, I'd be trying to get spontaneity back.
Yes, you need a bit of sexiness.
We're
too.
Designed for this fucking spontaneity. I mean, you put people together in any situation, in a working environment, people are going to have sex. You put them in any group, Homo sapiens are going to be having sex. It's a natural thing.
All animals.
And spontaneous. You start timetabling it, and you start having discussions, you start reading what I...
You can kill it stone dead, can't you?
You can kill it absolutely
because it's not sexy and it doesn't turn you on.
It's not going to turn you on.
I think there is a great value in saying, okay, we're not having sex. But we miss intimacy. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah.
We're going to take sex off the table because that there's a reason we're not having it. And it's a bit of a pressure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's do other things.
Yes.
And by other things, I do mean touch.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean
massage and all
massage.
The rest of it. Like, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what there
just
is?
Connecting together. Yeah.
Underrated thing. Kissing.
Hmm.
Kissing is great. Snogging is great. But kissing is a very intimate act that is non-pressurized because if you just say we're just going to kiss, we're just going to kiss, and you can say that and kind of get in.
You're breaking it back to like an early relationship, really. You know what I mean? Remember those first times you kissed someone for the first time?
And
it's
you,
the most exciting thing ever.
And all you did was kiss, actually, because you were only a kid and you weren't ready to have sex. And that's the same. That mirrors the position people are in their lives in a sexless relationship. They're not ready to have
great
sex.
Point, like
but
that's what
kissing
I try to do with clients
is still
bring it back.
Yeah,
get more intimate.
And kissing. And you know what is wonderful? If you do that, if you say sex is off the table, but we're going to kiss, we're going to sit on the couch.
All of a sudden, sex becomes on the table. You know what I mean? When you say sex is off the table.
Exactly. And actually, sometimes taking it off the table puts it right back on the table because now it's like, Don't you tell me it's off the table. I want it on the
table.
How
do I get it back on the table? Yeah. Now I'm interested. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think the baby steps thing like that.
I think the pressure is right. The pressure we put on each other to want to have sex with each other, to like it, to, you know, to enjoy it.
And the pressure is particular for men because there's a performance pressure which sometimes can kill it physically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because people feel the performance pressure and then they can't get an
erection. Virility and, you know, it's a bit of an identity of a man, isn't it, you know?
Well, I think it is, but I think men are much more multifaceted than just being an erection.
Absolutely.
If we're all orgasms, men are more than erections. Do you know
Absolutely.
What I mean? They are, but I do think there is societal stuff out there
that's in a man's
head. And he sees every movie on TV where all men are just
like
hopping.
Don Draper in Mad Men. You
and
know.
They'll just have sex with anybody all the time, anytime, any place, anywhere.
Yeah.
Anyone.
A walking erection, as you described it.
Yeah, and it's that's not
it's
the
destructive.
Case. Well, it's not true.
It's not true.
If everyone is Googling sexless marriages, it's not all coming from women saying no.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's also coming from men saying no. And I think men need to know there are other men saying no, because I think that might make them feel
a
bit better.
Other men, yeah, exactly, struggling with this idea.
I think women need to know that men say no, too, actually, because otherwise they feel really
rejected. You know, and that's a really important point. I think men say no for a whole host of reasons that are probably biological in a lot of ways, you know.
Yeah.
And it's trying to figure that bit out and not feeling the rejection. And so when you're rejected, you're kind of hurt and you might avoid the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, when we're hurt, we have two responses, kind of try to control or reject it. And I would say, like, you know, try to have the conversation. Try to open up about it.
I think there are a couple of other things here that we haven't mentioned and that we should. And they fall into both physical and communication. I think sometimes people have fantasies, have desires, particularly in long-lasting relationships where missionary on a Friday night after the late is just boring.
Mm-hmm.
So but they have it in their head, I'd like to do this, or I'd like, and they don't know how to say it, and so they don't communicate that I'd actually like to try something I heard about or something I read about or something I saw, and they want to mix it up a little bit. And I think sometimes people don't always react very well to that. Their partners, because they're a bit threatened by it. And where did you hear about
this?
But I think you have to be a little bit open to your sex life evolving and changing and maybe being more adventurous. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have to allow it to be that kind of space. I often said to my kids when they were trying new foods, I don't care if you don't like it and you don't eat it all the time, but you have to try it.
I like this analogy.
You see where I'm going?
I hear where you're going.
You got to try it once before you tell me you don't like it. I think that's a good attitude to have about sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
obviously, I'm not suggesting you have to do something that is absolutely repellent to you or dangerous
or
violent is
but just
apparent.
Be open to a bit of evolution, a bit of change, a bit of difference.
I'll accept that you don't like it if you've tried it, but I won't accept that you don't like it unless you've tried it. And I think that's a good way
I think you're right, and that's keeping it a bit spicy and a bit different and a bit change.
And
you know,
spicy is good
because routine is the killer of sexuality.
Well, it is if you know what the person's going to do before they do it, and then they just you're like, oh, yawn.
I remember a guy saying to me at my clinic, I always remember this line. I thought it was so sad. Said to me, I suppose she's like the wallpaper, Richard. I see her so often, I don't see her. And I think that's what happens to us sometimes. We see each other so often, we don't see that you're a sexual being, that you're just mom doing the sandwiches.
Yeah, you become the dinner maker, the clothes cleaner, whatever it is, the lift giver, all of those. But the other thing that I think in the modern era is 100% involved in sexless relationships is pornography.
Oh, absolutely.
So people are watching, predominantly men, not exclusively, watching pornography, and their dopamine hit is coming from porn, and porn is not real life, and the women in porn don't behave like women in real life and don't look like the women in real life. And
the men.
That's part of it, and the men completely. And that's part of it. And your sexual appetite is now honing itself
towards this
version of sex and this version of sex that is
real life.
Hitching up somebody's night dress and fumbling around the place is not the same, and it's not the. And the other thing is that because you're climaxing with porn through masturbation, and not to put too fine a point on it, you got that kind of very tight grip and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't different. Feel like penetration vaginally. Doesn't. It's not the same thing. It's coming between regular sex and relationships is dying a death because it's being replaced by people watching porn and masturbating.
I'm talking about this all the time because I see it in my clinic, and I see young men contacted me. It's so sad now. It's so sad. We've foisted this pornified view of intimacy on kids.
Yeah.
And they're struggling to, you know, I get phone calls into my clinic all the time from 15, 40, they hear me talking about it. And they know that I mightn't judge them, and they ring up the clinic and they want to talk to me about the 15, 16, and they're stuck in pornography. I work with couples and, you know, intimacy is gone, and the partner, generally the woman, hasn't a clue what's happened here. They might be only 24, 25, and they haven't a clue, or maybe a bit older.
And that idea of the sexual narrowing and honing,
becoming maybe taboo. And here's the thing about it, right, that I know, because I've done so much research into this, right? Dopamine, so we're all a bit dopamine sick. We're all searching for a little bit of hit of feeling good about ourselves. Yeah. The holiday we book, whatever it is, the relationships, the chaos in our lives, all of that's dopamine searching, right? But dopamine is involved in memory production. So when you open the fridge and you get to go food, you know, your dopamine fires, it programs your memory to say, this is where you go to get food. And so when you, say, masturbate to like an extreme image, your brain programs, this is where you go to satiate a desire. So now you can see about the narrowing of your sexual appetite. All of a sudden, when you get aroused sexually, you don't think my partner. You think more taboo sexual image. And that is the absolute isolation and despair that comes into people's lives.
And because porn has changed, it's not what it was. No. It's not the plumber coming around.
No, it's not. It's not like we used to have Channel 18, you know, it was a German story. Or I remember Eurotrash.
It's
all that kind of stuff.
It's choking, it's slapping and everything. Yeah. So choose that as a turn on.
Yeah.
And then you try it with your partner and she
rejects
very
or
legitimately goes, I don't want you to choke me, thanks very much. Now we have a real disconnect because now your sexual connection is fractured.
Well, you're right. But what happens here is that fractured sexual connection goes somewhere else. And then that's going for a massage with an happy ending. That's going to, you know...
And sex has become transactional for that person.
Meeting someone off the internet, you know, a sex worker or not. And so all of a sudden then you're completely in a different alley there of avenue of life.
That is the extreme reason why...
But it's actually more prevalent than we think.
But it is, exactly. I don't know. I think that might be a whole other pod, actually, that one. But bringing it back to people who maybe their partner isn't porn addicted or isn't that. I still think, obviously there's the physical side of things, but I still think communication is key.
It is the absolute.
So the foundation. First thing I think that people need to do is to identify to each other, not just to their friends
without
or to
blame,
their,
you know, without blame.
Is to say, we're not having sex. I'd like to do something about that. Would you like to do something about that?
Absolutely.
And I think that's a good opening.
Yeah, and how
place.
Are you finding this, our sex life? I mean, an open-ended question without blame. How are you finding things at the moment? Would you like it to be a bit different? Are you happy with the way our sex life is at the moment? And if there's, because you know, you might get some honest answers there. No, I'm not. But, you know, kind of that's how things are at the moment. What can we do about it?
I was saying about communication. I was saying about taking sex off the table and bringing back intimacy, like kissing and touch. I do think that's a good thing. We both agree that scheduling it and sort of saying, "Oh, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday," you know, that's terrible. But
worse.
Making space for it is different.
Yes,
because as you say, the wallpaper version of your partner is not very sexy. But that's not the same version of your partner as you might get if you go away for a weekend or something. Because we're all in a slightly different mood then. We're all a little bit freer of our domestic chains and of our routine. We're out of context. We always behave a little bit differently in a space that isn't our domestic space, because it's outdoor us, it's not indoor us, you know, it's not our inner selves, it's more of our. And something like going away for a night, going away for a weekend, making space. There are actually hotels you can book for the day.
Are there curious?
There are. I'm just saying. I've researched.
You have a friend.
This.
You have a friend who knows.
But there are
of a cousin.
So
who
you could.
Hotels.
You could. And how saucy would that be?
That would be very saucy.
As a couple.
Yeah, yeah.
To say.
And to meet up. You know what I mean.
Meet up in the bar.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's about
I do
that
know
bit
a couple who said
life.
That one of the best things they ever did for their sex life, and this is a couple. They were married. Was pretend they were having an affair, and they met each other. And went places. I don't mean outdoors to Fairview Park or anything.
But
they did things like that. And they said,
because you're seeing someone.
Reinvigorated them because it's the wallpaper, the mundanity, the repetitive nature. They mixed it up. And even as I'm saying it, I can kind of see, oh, yeah, I get that. I'm. It's clicking into something sexual in my own brain. Like, so no, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Mix it up a little bit.
Absolutely. And that's, I think that's a great idea, because we do view people and we see them all the time and we get used to
Mammy, daddy.
Yeah, exactly. We get, and they're terrible. Ugh. They're terrible ways to perceive someone, because all of a sudden the identity is gone.
Mammy and daddy are not sexual beings.
No, they shouldn't be.
Well, Jesus. No, they shouldn't be. And they're not. And so therefore, if that's how you're viewing your partner, no wonder you're not having sex with
them. And so that's that little bit of spice, bringing something different into the relationship. But trying to figure out maybe first of all what's coming to disrupt this. And if it was once fiery, which I think I always say this, I think every relationship starts as an affair. You know what I mean? You're separated
bring
by distance.
Bring it back. That's what I said. Bring it back.
You know, you're separated by distance. I also think, you know, in here as well, I joke about this, but I think there's a truth in it. I think the old ensuite toilet is probably one of the biggest killers to a bit of intimacy in someone's life as well.
I get why you're saying that.
I think that takes a bit of mystery out of your life and all the rest.
Interesting.
You know, I'm not a fan of that. And I'd always say, if I was building houses, I'd take the ensuite and I'd fucking shove it out the door there, because I think that's a killer.
We want an outdoor privy in the house.
Waking up in the morning and you're slashing in the dark. Oh yes, I'm going to sleep with this guy. You know what I mean? I don't think that's...
No. Okay, fair.
I don't think that's intimacy provocable. I don't think that we can solve that one. But I would think about those kind of like ideas of like changing our way of looking at each other, perceiving each other, talking about each other, watch how we talk to each other in fights, you know, watch what we say about each other, and think about our sexual habits, where we're going to satisfy that.
Yeah.
And the most important thing I often do working with men particularly is like, if you stopped your pornography habit, all of a sudden your sexual appetite for your partner will come back.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I also do think, maybe on a last kind of a note, is there are things like Viagra. There's loads of things that are not just Viagra, but everyone knows that brand name.
Cialis and Viagra.
That help. You know, that help people who, it isn't even just what they do physically. They help your confidence. Mm-hmm. If you think you're going to go in to start having sex, but you're not going to actually be able to complete sex, that puts you off having it. If you have the confidence that maybe it's going to go better than that.
Yeah.
That helps. And for women, there are things like lubrications. And positionally, people, the different positions are better depending on...
Next podcast, the different positions of sex.
The time of life that you're in. But that's what I mean about being open to mixing it up as well.
Things,
the analogy of you know... Mm. Don't tell me you don't like it unless you've tried it. I think there's a bit of that. So talking, being a bit more open-minded, mixing things up a little bit.
And actually understanding that this happens in our midway life through, you know what I mean? That happens. We don't have the fire that we had once, but we can still have a bit of fire that keeps us, you know.
It is more common
than we know.
Than uncommon.
Yeah.
As in, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I think
look at the Google searches.
I think it's more people are in that situation than are the ones that are having the great sex lives.
I don't know who they are. Liars.
Liars and cheats.
Liars and cheats, exactly.
I think that probably wraps up that,
doesn't
it?
It does indeed, Kira.
Anyway, we will be back next week with another pod for you. But thank you for listening today. Please, wherever you are, if you've enjoyed this podcast, do give it a 5-star review. Recommend us to a friend. Share it. But also like and subscribe, Richard.
Yes, absolutely. Like and subscribe.